Doug Scheiding of Rogue Cookers, baseball fan and barbecue world champion. You are listening to the Baseball and Barbecue Show with Lynn and Jeff.
From the studios of Baseball and BBQ on Long Island, New York, this is episode number 182 of Baseball and BBQ, where the BBQ stands for
Bar-ba-you.
I'm Jeff the Oak Coo Cohen, along with Leonard Hollywood Aberman. Welcome back to our podcast, Leonard. 182.
Jeff,
do you believe magic?
You're getting right to it. Do you believe in magic? Yes, I do believe in magic, Jeff. I do believe.
Why do you believe in magic?
Because I believe in David Krell, who wrote, "Do You Believe in Magic? Baseball in America," in the groundbreaking year of 1966. He will be with us on this episode. But Jeff?
Yes?
I think our other guests also are a bit magical.
They are? Ryan Cooper? Sean Ludwig? Great guys.
When it comes to barbecue, they are true magicians. And I don't mean that they make great barbecue, but they come up with barbecue stuff. They pull it out of their hat.
And they send it to anybody who subscribes to the smoke sheet.
Absolutely. How they do that every week is magical, to come out with that great publication. It's in my email every week. Jeff, can I just tell you that betonline.ag is your number one source for all your basketball information, stats, news, and scores. Get the latest odds and lines, including the latest player reports for this year's pro basketball playoffs. BetOnline is always your sports information headquarters this season, as we have you covered for all your sports wagering needs. Basketball, MLB, NHL, right to UFC and boxing. Bet Online is the fastest and easiest way to get your betting information, including live betting options and your favorite casino and card games you can play right from your home. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to get in on the action. Be sure to use our promo code BLEAV, that's BLEAV, to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet Online, it's where the game starts.
And what are we starting with?
I got a question for you, Jeff, before we start. Okay. That before you mentioned, do you believe in magic? I was all ready to come in and ask you this. Jeff,
yep.
Will there ever be a ghost runner in the Baseball Hall of Fame?
A ghost runner in the Baseball Hall of Fame? It might be. Who knows? The way Rob Manfred is screwing up baseball, you know, I wouldn't doubt it.
Can you imagine one day that you have someone, this ghost runner? I was just thinking about that the other day, because I was thinking about the DH, how it's now in both leagues, how it's become so much more important, you know, because we know what the DH, how it used to be used, and it just, I'm thinking all the positions in baseball, because I also saw something with the Atlantic League. I sent you the article that they're going to be doing some other things. Mm-hmm. And there was something about a designated
runner.
Yeah. So then I thought of the ghost runner. Can you imagine?
Look, if it's happening in the Atlantic League, that means Major League Baseball is experimenting. I wouldn't doubt it one day it comes to the major leagues.
And Jeff, I know we're going to get to David Krell, but can I just, I have got two shout outs. Can you give me a shout out?
Shout out.
Shout out number one is to a fan of the show, a friend of mine, and an incredible bowler too. And that is Zoe O'Brien. I know she's listening and I want to give her a shout out. And then Jeff, give me another one.
Shout out.
Anthony Marasco.
Hey, Anthony.
All right. Anthony was kind enough to send this. This was so nice, Jeff. He sent us Gil Hodges baseball cards, which he put a note with it. The note says that this card was on, it was on two places. One was, and I should have brought the note with me, but it was on the former, where they have the pitching mound for Shea Stadium. And then I believe the Ebbets Field marker or something. He put it down on there. And that was extremely nice of Anthony. So we thank him for his thoughtful card.
Yes, thank you.
And now, let's get to David Krell. And do you believe in magic? Baseball and barbecue listeners, you may remember this guest. He appeared with us on episode 129, discussing a book that he had just written, and somehow didn't think he could just ask if he could come on. He had to write another book to get back on. That's effort. So we greatly appreciate that he did that. Let me just tell you something about him. It says it so well in this new book. David Krell is the author of 1962, Baseball and America in the Time of JFK. That's the book that he had on episode 129. And Our Bums, the Brooklyn Dodgers in History, Memory, and Popular Culture. He edited the anthologies, the New York Mets in Popular Culture, and the New York Yankees in Popular Culture. Krell often presents at Society for American Baseball Research conferences, the Cooperstown Symposium on Baseball and American Culture, and the Mid-Atlantic Nostalgia Convention. He's the chair of Sabre's Northern New Jersey chapter, and he lives in Jersey City, New Jersey, if anybody cares to visit him. But here's the most important thing that we're going to say about this book. David Krell weaves a magnificent tapestry of the year 1966. Using baseball as the central thread, he magnificently combines the year's biggest events to make us all feel we are front and center and experiencing every moment. We could not have said that better ourselves. David, welcome to Baseball and Barbecue.
Thank you. It's good to be back.
Who did write that review there, Leonard?
It sounds so familiar. But it's not the one thing. Are we allowed to just jump on the guest right away and sure. Say, why isn't that in the book? There's three blurbs and that one's missing.
There were a lot of blurbs. It was not my choice which one to pick for the back cover.
But it is on Amazon. The book
is on Amazon.
And the blurb. And David, really, it's a phenomenal book. We're looking forward to talking to you,
thank you.
About it. We really are.
The name of the book is Do You Believe in Magic? Baseball and America in the Groundbreaking Year of 1966. And I chose the title because it was a hit song that year. I was looking for a song title, 65, 66, around there. And this one just jumped out. And I asked my editor if we could keep it. We could talk about the subtitle later. But I really think this fits the theme of the book.
And it was a great title, great book, 1966. You know, of course, the biggest story of the year was Len being born that year. But, you know, I reread this book, and it was even great the second time around. So many things happened in 1966 that changed America. So why, you know, so tell us why you decided to focus on 1966.
Well, same reason that I focused on 62, it hadn't been done in this kind of format. And it's one of those overlooked years. When we think about the 60s, we usually think 67, 68, 69, the counterculture, Woodstock, Vietnam. And Vietnam hadn't escalated to the point where it did in 67 and 68, certainly. You had some protests, but that really jumped. when you got into the latter part of the decade. And I just thought, with all the culture, pop culture, NASA, politics, literature, the Miranda warnings decision was that year, and juxtapose that against baseball. And it wasn't just the Orioles sweeping the Dodgers. It was Koufax retiring. Mm-hmm. It was Koufax and Drysdale with an epic salary holdout, which I'm sure we'll talk about.
Absolutely.
Angel Stadium debuted. You had Marvin Miller getting the union leader job, which was huge and not unanimous. Not everybody liked a union guy across the board. You know, some players thought they could do better on their own. So there was just this wonderful kaleidoscopic view of what was going on that I tried to employ. And look, I said it last time, if I wanted to write the book I wanted to write, it'd be 700 pages. I had to strip a lot out because, you know, we only have a certain amount of space when we're writing.
So, you know, we're going to talk about baseball and the cultural effects of 1966. But the first big thing in baseball in 1966 actually occurred in December of 65. And that's when Frank Robinson was traded right to Baltimore. Tell us about that trade, because that was a big trade.
The Cincinnati executive who jettisoned Frank Robinson thought he was too old. He thought he was past his prime. And what happened is Frank Robinson won the Triple Crown in the American League. And it's a storybook ending. They sweep the Dodgers in the World Series. He becomes a hero in Baltimore for sure. And, you know, traded for Mel Pappas. And you begin 66 with a lot of optimism in Baltimore. You have a lot of optimism with this young team that did fairly well in 64. And 2 years later, they have a legitimate power hitter in Frank Robinson.
David, the books that you write, the 1962, right, the 1966, what's so great about them is anyone could pick up these books, even if you're not the biggest baseball fan or even a baseball fan. There's history. These books are filled with history. Then as I'm reading, I see that Gilligan's Island started that year, came on. I don't know what made me think of it, but I'm like, Gilligan, Bob Denver, Bob Denver, typecast, right? He was always typecast. And then I'm thinking, David, you now are the writer of books of years. Maybe you're worried that you'll be typecast, but not a bad
possible.
There's many years that you could write about.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. I do like looking at a year in review and seeing what happened that was unique. Gilligan's Island was right in the middle of its run. It debuted in 64. It was only on three seasons, but perpetually in reruns, it seems to have gone on forever. At least that's how I felt in the 70s and 80s.
Right.
I Dream of Jeannie, Bewitched, these shows just were ubiquitous in syndication. And I wanted to represent that in the book. And that's why I interviewed Sidney Sheldon's daughter. Sidney Sheldon created I Dream of Jeannie. He was a major force in television. So getting her perspective was important. Getting William Dozier's daughter, Deborah, on record talking about how he produced Batman and conceived of it for television. That was a huge get. So I had a lot of help along the way with people who participated in interviews and helped me add color and context.
You know, Len and I were talking about I Dream of Jeannie the other day, and we said, there's no way they can make a television show like that in 2023. I mean, here's a guy who finds a woman who is going to, you know, make every wish of his come true. Never going to happen.
No, but if you talk to people who were around in that era, or sociologists, academics, they might tell you a different story. They might tell you, well, Samantha on Bewitched and Jeannie on I Dream of Jeannie were the forerunners of feminism because they had powers. They were empowered, whereas 10 years before, Lucy could never get in the show with Ricky. That was the ongoing gag in I Love Lucy.
Sure, okay.
Lucy, stay home. Lucy, you're not getting in the show. And now they have power to help Darren get an advertising client, power for Tony Nelson to be on the next space mission. And it was fun. It was campy. It was outrageous. And when you talk about great actors, I just have to say it. I hear about De Niro. I hear about Robert De Niro. I hear about Leonardo DiCaprio. But for Larry Hagman to play a bumbling astronaut and go 7 years after the show ends to be the most duplicitous, backstabbing, exploitative, is that the word? Exploitative, manipulative guy in J.R. Ewing in Dallas, you just can't believe that's the same guy.
Right. Yeah.
And his mother, for anyone who doesn't know, but his mother was played Peter Pan on Broadway. So, you know, David, one of the things I think as we look back, and everybody has the idea of the 60s, not idyllic ideal, but still, you know, the TV show, you know, Leave It to Beaver, the bottom line is you bring out what it was really like. It wasn't all just the housewife in the kitchen welcoming her husband home. Welcome home, dear. And, you know, with apron on and stuff. You bring it to life. And that's one of the great things about this book.
Thank you. There is a section where I talk about middle-class America, what the housewives are doing, what the men are doing. And I juxtapose that against the headlines. After a few drinks and after talking about the neighborhood gossip, it's, well, whose kid is going to Vietnam? Did you hear about the Jones kid? His number is up. Things like that were very, very real and tangible in 1966. And as I say, it wasn't to the level it was later in the decade, but certainly serious enough that you could be worried.
So let's talk about baseball in 1966. It starts with Sandy Koufax and the Don Drysdale holdout. And that was a big thing. If you're an LA fan, by the way, LA won in 63 and 65. They won the World Series. And here, Koufax and Don Drysdale, they want to hold out. Tell us, why did that happen?
Well, I start the book on New Year's Eve. And if you're a Dodgers fan, you're pretty optimistic about the upcoming season. They won in 7 games against Minnesota. They swept the Yankees in 63. You have the two greatest pitchers in baseball. And the story Don Drysdale tells Roy Firestone is they were having dinner and he saw that Sandy Koufax was upset about something. So Sandy says, well, I talked to management today and this is what I was told. And Don Drysdale said, well, I talked to the front office the other day and I was told the same thing. So they joined forces. And for Buzzy Bavasi, the GM, it was a big problem because his fear was precedent. What happens when it's a double play combination? What happens when it's the three starting outfielders or a pitcher and a catcher? So they really had to resolve this, but they stood their ground. Drysdale and Koufax for pretty much the entire month of March and a few days in February were not showing up. And I talked to a couple of Dodgers from that team. They wanted these guys to get all the money they could. They were good for the team. They deserved it. Obviously, fans wanted them to get on the roster. And also the GMs of the other National League teams, because if you don't have Koufax and Drysdale, your attendance will go down. It will go down in Philadelphia, in Houston, in St. Louis. Sandy Koufax is a marquee player. More people will go to your ballpark. So they were pretty nervous too. And finally, what happened? Chuck Connors from The Rifleman and the TV show Branded, he intervened. And for those who don't know or have forgotten, Chuck Connors was a ball player before he was an actor. And he had played in the Dodgers and Cubs organizations. So obviously he had a pipeline to these guys. And also to the front office, and he intervened. And there's a picture in the book where the four of them are at a table answering questions. Yep. I don't know if Chuck Connors actually answered any questions at the press conference, but he was there, and it's a great visual.
Yeah, absolutely.
David, Leo DeRocher is definitely a figure in this book. And I find that people, you know, they may not know as much about him, Can you tell us a little bit about Leo DeRocher and his time with the Dodgers and the Cubs?
Well, Leo DeRocher was a manager for the Brooklyn Dodgers, and he was adored and revered and beloved in Brooklyn.
Leo the Lip, right?
Leo the Lip. And you know, Brooklynites don't brook any nonsense. They like someone who's feisty and stands up to the umpires, and he did that. When he went to the Giants, it was a big blow. And, of course, the Bobby Thompson home run where he's jumping up and down and Eddie Stanky is hugging him. It just really was sad for Dodgers fans for so many reasons. He goes to the Dodgers and he becomes, I don't know if ambassador is the right word, but he was a coach. He was more visible certainly than Walter Alston. You know, Leo DeRocher recruited Jethro on the Beverly Hillbillies. He recruited Herman Munster. It wasn't Walter Alston doing that. So he loved show business. He knew those guys. He had a great rapport with show business people. And then he goes to the Cubs and later on the Astros.
And I have to read one thing that it's on page 44 of the book. You guys got to buy this book. DeRocher's mission to get the Cubs out of the bottom of the senior circuit was no easy task considering the competition throughout the National League squads. Listen to who was in the National League. Hank Aaron, Eddie Matthews, Don Drysdale, Sandy Koufax, Maury Wills, Juan Marichal, Willie Mays, Willie McCovey, Veda Pinson, Pete Rose, Jim Maloney, and Roberto Clemente. Wow. All of them playing at the time.
And they came close 3 years later, as you know. He just overworked his players and didn't give them a rest, especially Ernie Banks.
Yes,
that's a big reason why the Mets won.
Yes, absolutely. In 1966, Commissioner William Eckert also made a decision on a certain USD player, mm-hmm. which changed the fortunes of said New York Mets. Right. This might have been the greatest moment in New York Mets history.
Oh, absolutely.
So please, for our listeners who don't know and who should know, what was that?
Well, Tom Terrific was headed to the Braves, but there was some quirk in the legality of collegiate players. And technically, Eckert thought that he violated it and voided the signing. And Seaver consequently went to the Mets. And if he had gone to the Braves, my God, the Braves had some solid teams, and Seaver might have taking them to the first division in the late 60s and early 70s.
Yeah. So what happened is three teams put their names in a hat, and it was the Phillies, the Mets, and don't remember the third team, but Mets were pulled out, Mets signed them. History has changed.
Yeah.
David, just like your book, we're going to intersperse the baseball talk with popular culture talk.
Okay.
And you talk in here about Ian Fleming. You talk about the spy genre, mm-hmm. and Ian Fleming, President Kennedy endorsed Ian Fleming as his favorite author. You talk about Boris and Natasha, mm-hmm. From Bullwinkle. I'm going to sound like a fanboy, but I get just as much pleasure reading about all of the things in pop culture as the baseball. And that is what I think is so great about this book. Was great about the 1962 book. What a year I was born in. 1966. Really?
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. I think it's important to put things in context and to get a flavor of what was going on in the culture, in the country. You weren't just talking about baseball. You were talking about other things. Certainly, there's a lot of headlines that I went beyond because they just intrigued me so much. Caesar's Palace debuting, Constance Baker Motley, who figures prominently in two vital cases involving baseball. First Black woman on the federal judiciary. That was a breakthrough. And I think it's really not only imperative, but just it's also fun to see what were the main things going on in that era. Who were the heroes? what were people watching on television? What were they wearing? What was the popular soft drink? What were the ads like? What were the films like? It's a lot of work, but it's a lot of fun too.
Yeah. Star Trek.
You had Star Trek, right? You had the space race with the Gemini missions. I think it was, five missions that year?
Five missions.
And Len just mentioned Star Trek, so that was big in culture.
Sure.
The monkeys.
Yeah. And in literature, there was a couple of books that made, I guess, headlines. Valley of the Dolls.
Right.
And The Source by James Michener, right?
Right. I had to reread The Source for the third time to do this book. And it looks like a lot. It's a 1,000-page paperback. But Michener writes with such detail and such eloquence that you're in 100 pages before you realize it. And it's about the history of Judaism, the history of Israel, all done through the guise of an archaeology, what would be the word, archaeology project. And every time they go down a different level, they find an artifact, and that chapter represents the era for that artifact. And it's a really great depiction. All of Michener's books are great. Chesapeake, Hawaii, Alaska, that you can learn more about those topics than you could in three semesters at college.
And Valley of the Dolls, really, they had taboo subjects in that book.
Very taboo. Very taboo. And the thing that struck me about Jacqueline Suzanne, she didn't have any problem that I could find in the research in exposing the underside. Everyone sees glamour and money and fame in Hollywood. There's a definite underside. There's a big cost. And Dolls does not refer to women. It refers to pills. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. There's betrayal. There's a lot of sex stuff that had not been covered at all. A lot of topics had never been covered in literature, at least not in a bestseller to this degree. And what was great about Suzanne is she went to the warehouses. She talked to the truck drivers delivering her books. She really took this as a business. And she was the first author I could find that really, truly treated her work as a brand and as a business. You have to get, it has to be stacked here in the bookstore. I want mine to be first in the bookstore, etc. So she was really instrumental rather than just writing it and delivering the manuscript. She got her hands dirty and she really got involved.
The book is called Do You Believe in Magic? Baseball in America in the Groundbreaking Year of 1966. As Met fans, though, I will admit to you that when I first heard the title, Do You Believe in Magic? I did think it was going to be on 1969, the Miracle Mets. That was just that's not magic. It's miracle, but you know what I mean. But it's not. And I'm glad that it's not because you haven't written the 1969 one yet. Yeah.
Somebody's already done that. So I don't know that I would do the 69 Mets. 69 as a year is a possibility.
David, when you do a book like this, what do you rely on? Take us through a little bit of the research process. What are the main, are you relying on newspapers from the day? Are you deep in the, I don't even know if they have it anymore, microfiche? Do you do a lot of interviews with people that were around then? So what's the main way you do your research?
Well, newspapers for sure, but not everything is available on newspapers.com or ProQuest. So you might have to go to your local library and engage in interlibrary loan. We did that with the Los Angeles Herald Examiner because it's nowhere digitized. And I wanted to chart the Koufax Drysdale holdout from the two major papers. You were either an LA Times household or an LA Herald Examiner household back then. And there were other papers for sure, like the Long Beach Press-Telegram and the Hollywood Citizen News, but the Herald Examiner and the Times were the two biggest. So I sat there in the New York Public Library when we were able to get the microfilm, and I just downloaded as many articles as I could per day until I just burned out. You can only be at the microfilm machine for so many hours. And day after day for a month, the World Series, the pennant race, anytime Koufax had a great game, I would just upload them because I wanted to compare and contrast what the Times was saying. And the same thing with the Baltimore News American. I went to Baltimore on a research trip. I can't find the News American anywhere online. So I spent 2 or 3 days in Baltimore uploading articles about them winning the pennant, the trade that you mentioned involving Frank Robinson, the World Series games. What was the line? What were the odds? What were the News American commentators saying? And the reason that's important is because the other paper might have quotes that the first paper doesn't have. So to me, it's not enough to say, well, I have the LA Times, that's enough. But the LA Times might only have two players quoted, and the Herald Examiner might have three, or there might be a better quote. So it's really incumbent to do that. The interviews, sure, if people have passed on, then I try to get to their kids. Mo Drabowski's daughter, Beth, was extraordinarily gracious in granting me an interview and access, sharing stories about her dad. You have to make those phone calls, and you have to, not everyone's going to say yes, but you have to make them. And then with the TV shows, yeah, you want to watch a couple of episodes so you get the flavor, you find out what was going on. But what was the review? What was the review for Star Trek in 1966? What did people think? What did people think about Mission Impossible? It's not enough to just say, okay, Mission Impossible was about this elite group of spies, and here's who played them. I wanted to get more flavor, even if I wasn't going to use it in the book. I wanted for my own background. And for the Mission Impossible section, fortunately, Barbara Bain gave me a great interview and offered a tremendous amount of insight regarding this show.
David, speaking of what people think, when Koufax and Drysdale held out,
yeah,
did you get a feeling that the public was on their side, or did they have the attitude, these guys are playing a game, they're still getting paid well, and that people were a little upset that they would hold out?
The sense I got was, as the days wore on, they probably weren't going to sign. That they were too far apart. If after 3 weeks they haven't done it, then it's probably not going to happen. How could you not sign these guys? If you haven't signed the two greatest pitchers in baseball, or two of the greatest, by this point, let's just grin and bear it for the season. That was the sense I got from what I was reading. But fortunately, they were okay. But as far as when they played in the World Series, nobody gave the Orioles a shot.
But the public opinion of.
I didn't find too much on that, Leonard. Okay. I really didn't. This is just my personal opinion. And you know, I talked to a Dodgers fan here and there. And basically, they were just worried.
Right.
They were just worried. And look, if you're in the business of being a fan and your top guy is not signing, you're just holding out hope till opening day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, especially if you're a kid, you're just crossing your fingers. But there's a racial element. There is a what if, you know, what if Bob Gibson had held out? Would he have gotten that kind of money? There's a lot of interesting, provocative questions that came to me during the research and then while I'm doing these interviews. And I hadn't really thought about that, but that's a great question. If they were Black, would they have gotten the same money? Would they have even been allowed to hold out, or would the team... Any team, would a team GM say, well, that's it. We tried for 7 days. We tried for 10 days. Go try your luck somewhere else. This is our final number.
Mm.
It's an interesting juxtaposition.
Yeah. Yep. You mentioned the Dodgers-Orioles World Series. The Orioles don't have a chance. The Orioles sweep them, in four games. The last three games by shutout.
Right.
And I'm looking at the record here, and the Orioles only used four pitchers the entire series.
Wow.
But Jeff, if you talk to Dodgers fans of that era, they will say, my guys were tired.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Orioles clinched, I think it was September 22nd, and the Dodgers didn't clinch until the end of the season. So when you clinch a couple of weeks ahead, you can relax your starters.
Sure.
You can give the second stringers a chance to play. you're still giving 100%, but you don't have that added burden of winning. Every error is crucial. Mm-hmm. So couple that with the pressure of a three-way pennant race. When you begin September, it's the Pirates, the Giants, and the Dodgers.
Right.
It really was a vicious, tough battle.
Mm-hmm.
You got to Labor Day, and the Dodgers were able to eclipse the Giants, and they go in really not able to rest at all.
Right, right. In 1966, Angel Stadium opened.
Right.
And it's still open. It's the fourth oldest stadium standing in the country, Major League Stadium, I should say, standing in the country. But there's a person, Jack Dutton, had a lot to do with that. Tell right. us about him and Angel Stadium.
Well, I was looking for photos of Angel Stadium, and I came across a photo of Jack Dutton with Gene Autry from the early 70s. And at that point, he was the mayor of Anaheim. And I said, gee, I wonder if he was the mayor in 66. So he was not, but he was on the he was in the city government, city council. And I said, well, I want to know more about this guy. And the more I researched, the more I wanted to know. And I reached out to his daughter. She gave me some great information. He was a lifelong resident of Anaheim, self-made millionaire, owned a restaurant, really wanted to elevate Anaheim as a city. And in the 50s, as you guys know, Disneyland was built, but he wanted to take it further. And it's because of Jack Dutton that they got the ballpark and they got the convention center. Now, when a ballpark is erected, as you both know, there's always an outcry about where money should be spent. Shouldn't we spend it on teachers? Shouldn't we spend it on social services? Shouldn't we spend it on food for the poor? Well, those are all legitimate. But the counter to that is we're creating jobs for working class people. The concrete has to be poured. We need electricians. We need people to put up windows. We need people to install the seats, et cetera, et cetera. We need truck drivers to deliver the materials. And what Jack Dutton saw was, if you put this ballpark here, guess what happens 81 days a year? 81 days a year, sports writers from the visiting teams are writing Anaheim in the byline. Radio and TV broadcasts are saying, we're live at Anaheim as the Angels take on the Tigers, the Yankees, etc. So it's great publicity for Anaheim. And according to my research, that ballpark plus the convention center really took Anaheim and Orange County in a new direction.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's still a nice looking park. I was there a couple of years ago. It's still there and very going much. Very well. Also in 1966, the Hall of Fame ceremony was on July 25th. Two greats were inducted, Ted Williams and Casey Stengel.
Right.
Ted Williams gave a speech that I guess was, I don't know if controversial, but it had to be said. Would you like to explain that?
Sure. Ted Williams took a few seconds from his speech and he advocated for the Negro Leaguers to be inducted. And he called out Josh Gibson and Satchel Paige by name. I don't know of any other player or baseball notable who, at that level anyway, who advocated for that, especially on that grand stage. You're at the Hall of Fame. That's a hallowed place, as you guys know. And he takes the spotlight away from himself. And it took 5 years before Satchel Paige was inducted. So it wasn't immediate, but you're right. You're exactly right, Jeff. It had to be said. They were not allowed in the Hall of Fame, or what maybe not even considered, because they didn't play a certain amount of time in the major leagues, but they couldn't play that time because of the color of their skin. Before 1947, and well afterwards, a lot of teams didn't. You know, it wasn't automatic that teams
integrated. No, it took 12 years. Robinson. It took 12 years for all the teams to be integrated, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the Phillies, 57. I think the Tigers, it was 58. The Red Sox
was 59, yeah.
So this was not an immediate thing. And for Williams to take that opportunity and let people know how great they really were, and after that, we started to learn more about Turkey Stearns and Cool Papa Bell and a lot of other Negro League greats that eventually got in and should have been in long before.
Okay, then I have a follow-up then. In 1966, Marvin Miller took over the Players Union. And I got to tell you, I hated Marvin Miller. And I'll tell you why. Because when I was a teenager in the 70s, the strikes and stuff, and every time it was the back page was Marvin Miller. Now, as an adult, I understand what happened and it was necessary and all this things. Yeah, I understand it. But when you're a young teenager, you're going, oh, sure. A strike, you know. But Marvin Miller took over the Players Union and the ball started rolling toward free agency.
Yeah, and as I say, it was not a unanimous approval. People thought that he was going to upset the apple cart, that he'd asked for too much, and that would cause owners not to hire certain players. But he was concerned about things like working conditions. Do you have an off day after a 10-day road trip when you travel back? When you go back to your home city, do you play the next day? What kind of hotels are you staying at? And he really, I think he also benefited. I haven't done too much thinking about this other than in a general sense, but I do think he benefited from the Drysdale-Koufax holdout. Once people saw that players of that caliber could stand up and really force a compromise, then my feeling is that Marvin Miller got a few more people on his side. And he did a very smart thing. He did a listening tour. He went to the different ballparks and he listened. He wanted to know what these guys thought. He wanted to know their problems. You can't solve a problem until you define the problem.
Right.
And he wasn't coming in saying, I'm going to be your leader and this is what we're going to do. He wanted to know, okay, what are your main griefs? Is it money? Is it, well, that's tangible. That's easy to figure out. But there are other things, some that we just mentioned, that are not so easy to quantify.
And he kind of said, you don't work for me, I work for you.
Exactly. He made that point because a lot of guys, especially veterans, looked at him askance and thought he's going to come in and tell us what to do and we'll be an afterthought. He's only out for glory. He's only out to confront the GMs and the owners of the team, which is hardly the case. That's really not what happened. He wanted to be armed with information but before he was able to go to battle.
David, in the back of the book, you have in the appendix a poem called Drabowski on the Mound. I'm enjoying reading that poem.
Yeah, Drabowski was a journeyman pitcher. He was a starter. And then in 1966, the Orioles moved him to the bullpen. And they reshaped him as a reliever or a long reliever, not someone to just come in and close out the game. Well, in the first game of the World Series, Dave McNally gets bounced around a little bit, and Hank Bauer calls for Drabowski from the bullpen. Drabowski comes in and sets a relief pitching record for strikeouts in a game of the World Series. And that's a great story. You know, it's a great World Series story, just like Reggie Jackson hitting 3 home runs in a World Series game. But when I was talking to his daughter, Beth, I found out, and I don't want to go too much into it here, but there was a member of Mo Drabowski's family who died on the date of that World Series game 7 years before. 7 years to the date before he had a member of his family die. And I thought, well, if you believe in heaven and karma and the supernatural and guardian angels, then this poem will reaffirm that, and the story in the World Series chapter will reaffirm that. If you don't, this might nudge you a little bit towards that line. And I just felt compelled to describe in a poetic way what Mo's life was like. To summarize it, you know, it goes beyond one great day. It goes beyond having a Hall of Fame day. He was on all these different teams, and he was a joker. He was a practical joker. He was the fun guy. He was the guy. He's a great clubhouse guy. He was the one you wanted to just hang around with. And there's a lot to be said for those types of guys. Some guys are just workmanlike. They are just there to do a job. Some guys are pranksters. Some guys are jokers. Some guys are team leaders. Some guys are cheerleaders. You need a good mix. You can't all have 25 guys being the same personality. And he was just a guy who really let people have fun. But to have that poem in there, I had said to my editor, Kristen Karniski, I don't think it belongs in the narrative, but if we can, I'd love to do it as an addendum at the end.
Well, that's a great poem.
I think you've written the next Casey at the bat.
Possibly. I used Casey as the cadence, which you could probably figure out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The name of the book is Do You Believe in Magic? Baseball and America in the Groundbreaking Year of 1966. The author is David Krell, who we have with us. David, I want to get back to a little bit of the culture in America at that time. Sure. One of my favorite shows when I was a kid was Batman. Mm-hmm. And this was seismic in 1966. And, you know, when I kept watching it, you know, there was a lot of celebrities who came on, not just as villains, but as cameos.
Yeah.
Be Sales, Sammy Davis Jr., you had Vincent Price and
Dick Clark,
all these great guys who come on. Roddy McDowell was a villain. So right. all these people come on, and the cast was just fantastic. Julie Newmar and Cesar Romano, Burgess Meredith, who you write in the book had a, you know, was kind of blacklisted for a while.
Yeah.
You know, so tell us about Batman.
Well, William Dozier had Batman in his mind to be a TV show, and he put a comic book on television. No one had ever seen colors like this. They were so vibrant. And back then, remember that not every show was filmed in color. The Munsters wasn't, the Addams Family wasn't, the first year of Gilligan's Island wasn't, the first 5 years of the Andy Griffith Show weren't. So to have Batman in color was a big deal. Couple that with the character actors that you mentioned, Roddy McDowell, Vincent Price, Cesar Romero, Julie Newmar, Ida Lupino, Van Johnson, Art Carney. Mm-hmm. The list goes on and on. And it became the in show for about a year, year and a half. 66 was certainly its apex into 67. And then by 68, it was canceled. But it had such an influence, and it's a perfect example of when Hollywood creates something that's a success, everything will follow. So CBS, in its infinite wisdom, created all superhero shows for its Saturday cartoon schedule in the morning, called it Super Saturday. You had shows like Captain Nice, The Green Hornet, which was really the Green Hornet was a radio show in the 30s and 40s, and it was by the same producer of The Lone Ranger, and the Green Hornet is the Lone Ranger's grandnephew. But they made the Green Hornet more of a detective show, a straightforward detective show, even though there was a crossover on Batman. And people just took to this. They needed a hero. It was camp. Kids just loved the superhero aspect, and adults got the jokes. They knew it was a satire. They knew he was poking fun at what was going on in the comic books. And yes, it was great. I mean, what child didn't fantasize about driving that revamped, renovated Lincoln Futura down the highway?
Exactly. Exactly. It was 14 miles to Gotham City.
14 miles, which I never could understand. Why is he so far from Gotham City? I could never figure that out.
Right. He needed a cave.
He needed a cave. The
cave's closer. You know, it's funny, as you were talking about Batman, I thought, oh, I'll quickly Google and see. There's got to be, back then, you know, you were talking about all the cameos, right? And especially when they're doing the climbing, and they would have, I remember Werner Klemper, who was right.
Colonel Klink
in Hogan's Heroes, and even Lurch was in there. And I'm just Googling because I'm thinking, was there a baseball player that made a cameo on Batman? But I could not find one.
No, but there is a dialogue with Chief O'Hara and Commissioner Gordon, and I think they're arguing whether Maury Wills was better than Ty Cobb.
Wow.
Something along those lines.
Wow. Leave it to you, David. That's good.
So it was a baseball related show. I don't have it in front of me, but I think there was an episode where the villain of the week was trying to kidnap a Gotham baseball player.
Right.
Yeah. The I wonder what Gotham's team was called. If they had.
So, you know, you talk about 1966 again with the culture. There's so many. I Spy was there, a groundbreaking show. Dick Van Dyke Show, you speak about. Mission Impossible, which you mentioned before. Everybody, we're not going to talk about that now. You got to get the book because it's fantastic. You know, toward the end of 1966, we have a retirement of Sandy Koufax.
Right.
End of an era. Mm-hmm. And he was only 30 years old. Who retired at 30 years old, you know? Maybe, you know, if we had the technology back then, it wouldn't be Tommy John surgery. It would be Sandy Koufax surgery. Yeah, he retires. And do you want to tell us why and how and the whole story behind it?
He did not want to go through the pain anymore. I mean, he had to soak his arm in ice. It was too high a cost. I mean, he had an extraordinary run for 4 years, right? 63, 64, 65, 66, and 62. He could put 62 in there as well. He just was not up to that superhuman endurance. Who would be? I don't blame him a bit. I mean, the guy threw four no-hitters, a perfect game, led the league in wins his last 2 years. He just didn't want to throw his arm out, which might have happened had he continued.
Sure. It was definitely the end of an era with Sandy Koufax, that's for sure.
1966, New York City Mayor John Lindsay allowed WPIX-TV to film a fireplace in Gracie Mansion for the U-Log. Premiering on Christmas Eve, 1966, this holiday special became an annual favorite for New Yorkers. Everybody knows the Yule Log. Yeah, that's just another little tidbit from this book.
Yeah, it's a great New York icon. It was gone for a while. God knows why they did not air it for so many years, but it really was is an emblem of New York. You know the Yule Log is on, and it gets high ratings.
Yeah,
it gets high ratings.
Yeah. David, I would think after writing this book and doing all this research, the next step is to go on Jeopardy, because with all this knowledge, I would assume you could do quite well.
We'll see. You never know.
David, we thank you for your time. Please let everybody know where they can get the book. And anything else you want to promote?
They can get it on Amazon or on the Roman and Littlefield website, ROWMAN.com.
Fantastic. And you have any social media you'd like to, so people can reach out to you?
They can go to DavidKrell.com or follow me on Twitter, David Krell.
The book is called Do You Believe in Magic? Baseball and American and Groundbreaking of 1966 and a picture of the world champion Baltimore Orioles on the cover. Pick it up. Great book.
After reading this book, you will believe in magic.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much, David.
Thanks, David.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
Hi, this is Gary Mack of the Mets Musings podcast. And if you like barbecue and you like baseball, then you have to listen to Baseball and BBQ with Jeff and Lynn. They always have the best guests from the world of baseball and the world of barbecue, all in one little package. So check it out. Baseball and BBQ with Len and Jeff. Okay, guys, take it away.
And thank you, David, for joining us. Len, I'm telling you, that was a terrific book. 1966, what a year. I mean, everybody should go back and read about what happened in 1966. What a really history-changing year.
Yes, I know. And as you mentioned, I was born that year.
Well, history does have its bad moments.
Okay, I lob. Jeff, that was such a lob.
That was a softball. And I knocked it out of the park.
Right out of the park. If you didn't, I would have been disappointed.
If anybody wants to reach the show, our phone number is 516-855-8214. Email us, baseballandbbq@gmail.com. We have a Twitter.
Tweet, tweet.
At baseballandbbq. Leave a comment on our Facebook page, baseballandbbq. Instagram, it's baseballandbarbecue, where barbecue is all spelled out. Our website is www.baseballandbbq.weebly.com. Please rate, review, subscribe, tell your friends, all that fun stuff.
And I want everybody to go to baseballbbq.com. Jeff, if people don't know it by now, as we say, it's grilling season. It has been for a while. And if you are using the same boring tools, the same spatulas and tongs and cutting boards, you shouldn't be. There's no need to be. Go to baseballbbq.com. You will see some amazing things. Jeff, the cutting board is shaped like home plate.
It is, yeah.
Now, is home plate bigger?
It's a little bigger, yes.
So then they need to make the cutting board a little bigger. No, it's just a great site. We hope that everybody checks it out and gets their engraved grilling tools, and they will truly love it. And speaking of loving something, what's coming up, Jeff, that people are going to love?
The barbecue quote of the week.
Golf is my passion, and so is great barbecue. That is from golfer John Daly. And if you see John Daly, he really has enjoyed his barbecue.
Very good. Very good. Now, we have, as our next guest, Ryan Cooper and Sean Ludwig. And we were expecting that this would come out in May. It's come out a little early. So there is one event that they did not get to mention, and that is the upcoming Jeff Michener benefit at Pig Beach in Queens, New York. I know that they would have mentioned it if they had known that this was coming out a little earlier. So I'm just helping them out. But they don't need assistance. They are really doing great with their knowledge of the barbecue world. So let's get right to it. Ryan Cooper and Sean Ludwig. Baseball and barbecue listeners, you're going to recognize these two voices. They have their finger on the pulse of the barbecue community. It's incredible what they know about barbecue. Probably what they've forgotten about barbecue, most people don't know. Sean Ludwig and Ryan Cooper, the creators of the Smoke Sheet and NYC Barbecue Weekly, as well as the Barbecue Tourist, you name it, they do it. We are so thrilled that they've come back to the show. It's been a while. Gives them some time to forget and come back. Guys, welcome. We really appreciate it. Welcome to Baseball and Barbecue.
Thank you. We are thrilled to be here.
Sean, let's start with you. It's been a while, but you've been a little busy. I think since we last spoke to you, I think you got married. You had a child.
Indeed, yes. I think I might have seen you just before a lot of things were happening. And so, yes, got married. I have a 7-month-old named Lincoln. He's the best, but it's a lot of work. You guys, I think everyone here knows the pains and the joys of having a young child, and it is a lot of work. So unfortunately, I have not had as many barbecue trips in the last 7 months because I have a 7-month-old.
But think about it. When you now you have somebody you can bring with you on those.
I cannot wait. I cannot wait. He gets a little bit older, a little easier. We can go cruising around the country, try and barbecue joints. I think Ryan does that with his kid as well.
Yes. Yes, I do.
Maybe Lincoln. Is Lincoln having formula or is it barbecue sauce?
You know, we're not quite on the barbecue sauce yet, but don't worry. We'll get there. Give him a little more time to cook.
He needs his ribs fall off the bone at this point, but not for long.
Pureed ribs.
So, Sean, thankfully, the pandemic has subsided. We're back to competitions. We're back to events. I mean, I know this is coming out in May, so we won't talk about prior, but we know there's events that will have happened. Give us May, June. Give us an update on what we can expect. Now, of course, we got the whole country to talk about, so it's kind of hard to pinpoint. But what are some bigger events coming up?
Absolutely. I know there are a lot of events, don't get me wrong. And we do have a lot of events listed on our website, bbqnewsletter.com. That, if I'm forgetting something, it's probably there. But I would mention a few highlights. May 5th and 6th, you've got the Barbecue Fest on the Noose. That's one of North Carolina's biggest barbecue festivals. Don't forget about the Carolinas. You know, I think like in the barbecue world, sounds like, oh, this huge thing in Texas or this big thing in Kansas City or whatever. Carolina barbecue is going strong. That's a cool, really cool event that's happening May 5th and 6th. One of the most important things to mention, May 17th through 20th, Memphis in May. Now, Memphis in May is a big question mark right now. And as people are probably going into this recording and it hasn't happened yet, there's so many question marks around this event. The event I went to last year, and it was in a parking lot, basically. And they were in the transition of remodeling their park that's on the river. And it's just such a big thing for that community and a lot of the people who go to Memphis in May. And we just don't know exactly how it's going to turn out this year because they're doing it in a smaller location now. The park has been renovated. The city council is very negative about it and acting like, woe is me, this is a big event. And it's as if they've been surprised by the fact that it's a big event. They've lowered the number of teams. Honestly, I think the event is going to be really cool, but it might end up being a lot smaller just because they're trying to just put a lot of limitations on it. So I suspect it will still be a very cool event, be awesome to travel there, but it just won't have as much camaraderie in a sense. They just people from everywhere. You got all these backyard teams coming in doing cool stuff. This year will be a lot smaller. So honestly, will be really interesting to find out how that one turns out. A few other fun ones that I'll mention, the Denver Barbecue Festival that's in Denver. That is later in May. Really cool event. The Denver barbecue scene's really cool. And then I would also mention the Windy City Smokeout in Chicago. That is July 13th through 16th. And that was a really fun one because Ryan and I went there. It's half barbecue, half country music festival. You could really go there for either one and have a good time. But really, like, I love the fact that you could go there just to be like, oh, I'm a big country music head. I want to see all these big acts, but then don't know your way around barbecue. And you get introduced to barbecue from all over the country, maybe even international. You know, they bring in so many amazing people. So I think that one's a cool one. You could also, but if you know your barbecue really well and go there, you have an edge because you got all the casual people who come and they don't know their way around this. Oh, you got to go to this one. You got to go to this one. You got to go to this one. And I think that event is a lot of fun. Honestly, I would pair that event if you're a big barbecue head. I would go pair that with like a trip to do multiple things in Chicago. I would go to the Windy City Smokeout for like one day, maybe 2 days if you're really just feeling it, but then pair it with doing other fun things around Chicago. And so that is a really cool event. The weather's usually beautiful around that time. Definitely would recommend doing that one. Ryan, am I forgetting any other events that you can think of that are sort of highlights that we should sort of throw people to that are good on May, June, July?
What about, do you have anything going on in New York in May?
Right now, and this is so funny, is that we actually have stuff coming up in April, but I don't have anything on my calendar for May, except that's not true. I just remembered there is an event, Rib King NYC, and apologies. I literally am, you know, coming from, you know, baby duty to barbecue duty. And when you're in that, right, that you're just like, oh, my head is half here. And I'm just getting my head back from being, you know, dad. So Memorial Day weekend, May 27th, Rib King NYC is an awesome, very fun event. This year is being held in Industry City in Brooklyn. And as somebody who used to live pretty close to Industry City, it is awesome. I don't know if Lynn and Jeff can make it to Rib King NYC, but you should. It is a really fun event. New space. Industry City is such a cool complex with a million different types of restaurants and bars and shops. And so not only will you be able to go there to Rib King NYC for music and a bunch of different amazing people serving up great ribs, but you can also do all this other cool stuff in the Industry City complex. So you can spend the whole day there pretty much.
Sounds great. You know, you mentioned barbecue trips. So Ryan, I want to ask you, I know smoke sheet a couple weeks ago, there was an article, 5 tips to make your barbecue road trip a success. You want to talk about that and tell us best ways to make it a success?
Sure. We're going into barbecue road trip season for me. In fact, I feel like I've been going to Kansas City every weekend the past few weekends, and I'll be going coming up very soon as well. My biggest kind of advice to people about barbecue road trips is to make sure you pace yourself. The very first barbecue road trip I went on to Texas, it's actually where I met Sean, I thought you had to eat the entire meal at every restaurant you went to. And so that just doesn't, I found out really quickly that doesn't work. One of the best things to do is to bring some friends along or make friends, new friends, stand in the line at barbecue restaurants and kind of break bread with them, share food, pace yourself, and then kind of head on to the next place and find out what you like. The other piece of advice I have is to always do your homework before you go. Like, don't just kind of show up. I say this having done exactly that, you know, so many times, just kind of showing up and not really knowing what I'm doing. But if you can do a little homework ahead of time, figure out what a place is known for and order that from the menu instead of just kind of showing up and staring at the menu and being lost. It's a lot better, you know. Make sure you order what the place is known for, what special items they might have.
Should you bring a cooler on this trip?
Absolutely, you should bring a cooler. I ended up getting a couple of Yeti coolers, which the other great thing about that is you get barbecue stickers and magnets and things like that at all these barbecue joints. And so I've filled a couple of Yeti coolers with stickers, and then I have so many stickers now I had to start putting them on a big deep freeze, and I filled that up too. So, but yeah, definitely bring a cooler.
Jeff and I did a trip to Citizens Bank Park 1 year. Bull's Barbecue was there, and they fed us very well, but we got there early for the tour and everything. We ate and ate and ate. And then we had this big smoked turkey leg left over. But we wouldn't be home for hours.
He's telling the story again. So for the people listening, you know, you've heard this thousands of times.
But Jeff wanted to hold this thing all day in the hot sun and bring it home. I was like, Jeff, there's no way. So that's why I asked you, you got to bring a cooler.
Yes, I admire his dedication, though. He's Thank you, Sean.
Thank you.
Yeah, he did not want to let this thing out of his grasp.
You know, funny thing is about Ryan mentioning the barbecue tips is that inadvertently, the reason this even thing exists is because we kind of followed the barbecue tips. You made friends while waiting in line, and then everyone is like, yeah, but like, are we going to be able to get everything? But yes, we can get everything if we all kind of get together on this. Actually, I just did this for a trip this last weekend. I made friends with other people and was like, hey, do you want some of this stuff? Maybe I can get a little bit of that thing. And it worked out great. So don't be afraid to like ask other people who are also trying everything, want to try everything. Like, you never know. You might start a barbecue newsletter with one of them.
Yeah, exactly.
We read the smoke sheet and NYC barbecue religiously. Every Wednesday, the smoke sheet comes out. Listen, we get a lot of ideas from it. It's phenomenal. I notice you've been having some guest writers. What do you find to be the most popular articles with the smoke sheet? Oh, both, actually.
Yeah, that's hard to... Yeah, I mean, sometimes it's really surprising what is the most popular article. For the longest time, at least on our website, the most popular article was one that a guest author wrote, which, you know, bums me and Sean out that we work so hard on this. And then a guest author comes and like steals all the spotlight. But one of the best articles that's the most popular was about barbecue TV shows that you could watch on streaming channels, which is great. And it was really popular, obviously, during the pandemic when everybody's kind of stuck at home and wants to know what they could watch and everything. So that was a very popular one. We've had some very popular issues on different cuts of meat, especially on Wagyu and Wagyu beef. But we've had very consistent readership. It's kind of like things are steadily growing through the years. And so thankfully, most of the topics we have focused on get quite a lot of readership, which
you
is great.
You did do a story on us. I would imagine that must be a big.
Oh, yeah. That one.
Yeah, that one took was off. Through the roof. Yeah.
it was a home run.
Yeah.
So. Very good. All right. Let's talk about products. Now, for some of us, there is no barbecue season, but we know barbecue season's coming up. The weather's getting nicer. What are some new products to look for? Yeah, let's start there. What are some new products that we should be excited about that are coming out in barbecue?
Well, I was really fortunate that I recently got to go to the grand opening of a huge barbecue store down in Kansas City called Proud Souls Barbecue just 2 weekends ago. And they had a lot of new products that they were kind of showcasing. And one that I was particularly excited about was, and we did a story about this company a few years ago, Urban Slicer Pizza. The pitmaster, Matt Frampton, he runs Urban Slicer Pizza. So he kind of made the transition from barbecue into the pizza world. So he still has one foot in the barbecue world. But Urban Slicer Pizza comes up with this really great high quality dough that you can make at home that's going to have, you know, restaurant quality pizza. It's not like, you know, the stuff you get out of the box at the grocery store. This is very, very high quality. And he debuted this dough a couple of years ago, but last weekend I was eating this pizza and turns out it was completely gluten-free, and I would have never guessed it. When I think of gluten-free pizza, I'm thinking, oh, it's probably not going to, it's going to taste different, you know, but this I would have never guessed this was gluten-free. So he has all sorts of great products like that. He has some two different kinds of seasonings and some really good sauce as well. So I would check that out. And especially if you have anybody in your family, you know anybody that has gluten intolerance, check out that gluten-free stuff. You'll never know that there's any difference.
You know, Sean, I noticed that you're wearing a hat that says Hoodoo Brown Barbecue. So I'm curious. I Googled it, and it looks like it's in Connecticut. So I'm wondering if you've been there and how'd you like it?
I am indeed wearing it, and I would highly recommend, yeah, if you live in the tri-state area to make it to Hoodoo Brown one of these days. So, gentlemen, I think that pointing to you that you needed to make a visit. Maybe we can all go one of these days. It's very good. Awesome. It's very good. I actually went because I took a barbecue class there. Like, I spent, I don't know, 4 to 5 hours there before they opened. We basically spent time doing brisket. We did ribs. You almost are helping them make their food for the day, but they're obviously keeping a really close eye on what you're doing. Don't take too much fat off the brisket, you know, that kind of thing. But it was a lot of fun. And the thing is that there aren't that many places that do barbecue classes. It was really a great experience. I wish more restaurants and, I don't know, barbecue guru type guys in the Northeast would do more classes and stuff like this. But I kind of wanted to do it just because it was a fun experience. Not to say that I hadn't read a lot of the things they had teaching, but it was also cool to be hands-on. So I'd highly recommend if you want a barbecue class, check out their barbecue classes. And then also, it's just a really great restaurant in Connecticut. Definitely some of the best barbecue you'll find in Connecticut and the Northeast.
What did you guys think? And every time you think barbecue, you know, is this tight-knit group, but it's expanding. And then you see Dave Grohl of the Foo Fighters is a big barbecue guy. And he came in, you know, unheralded, just wanted to cook for people, came in. I think he was fighting. He was cooking for, was it first responders or there was something. It was charitable. And he came in and just brought in smokers. I was amazed by that.
Yeah. So I know most recently in the news, he rolled his smoker to some homeless charitable shelter. Organization, a homeless shelter or something like that, and cooked for 12 hours. And last summer, I believe it was, he was cooking for firefighters for battling the wildfires out in California. Yeah, it's pretty amazing that he's really into it. Apparently, the story is that he had hurt his leg or broken a leg or something like that and was kind of stuck at home and discovered Malcolm Reed on YouTube and started learning everything he could about barbecue through Malcolm. So yeah, pretty cool.
He's probably like the most famous barbecue, non-barbecue guy now, because he advocates for barbecue and talks about barbecue a lot, but he is, you know, like a superstar, probably worth a lot more money than almost any other barbecue person out there. But he's, you know what I mean? Like he's a genuine bona fide celebrity. And I think, you know, in a lot of ways, he's like he's an advocate for barbecue, the barbecue community now. So it's pretty awesome. So maybe we'll see him at one of these events, you know, one of these days.
That would be great. It might be Dave Grohl and Bobby Flay. I'm trying to think of.
Yeah, maybe.
That could be a new show, man. I'm saying that could be like a new, it could happen, man.
Yeah, you've got Snoop Dogg and Martha Stewart. So, I mean, it's not so far-fetched.
It's not. Honestly, in the next year or two, Dave Grohl will have a barbecue show. I guarantee, like, almost can feel like very strongly it could happen. So
yeah, we're always amazed with the baseball players that we'll have on. Some of them are just, they love barbecue. It's quite amazing. They'll just, you know, can't we talk about barbecue? But you hit 50 home runs. Yeah, but I can make a great brisket.
Yeah, just at that Proud Souls event I was at in Kansas City, there were a few Chiefs players there. And the one Chiefs player, Mitch Schwartz, he just wanted to talk about barbecue. He did not want to talk about football at all. He just was talking up a storm about barbecue. It was really great.
He just won the Super Bowl.
Right, I know.
So, guys, you know, I've been looking online and I see, looks like griddles are making is hot in the barbecue market. I mean, look, I'm from a novice. I really don't think of a griddle as a barbecue tool. But what do you guys think?
I'm a little torn on it as a barbecue tool, but I think that it's really versatile. You know, like you can do a lot with the grill, right? So it's like maybe use the griddle, but also use other tools at your disposal. Ryan, what do you think?
I got a griddle and I just didn't enjoy it as much, although I know that you can make some great things. I ended up giving it away, honestly. I prefer either a Weber grill or a smoker to a griddle, but I know you can make fantastic food on it. It just was not for me.
I mean, if you're making like smash burgers, right?
Yeah, that was about the only thing that was like, yeah, oh, that's really good, but otherwise, yeah, I'd just rather grill something.
See, I thought every time I hear griddle and I see it, I think, why not have your grill and just have a big cast iron skillet? You know, exactly. Or you could, right? You could get the, and it doesn't have to be a round skillet. They have flat cast iron, you know, square. Why can't you just put that on your grill? I don't really get the griddle thing.
Okay, hold on. Let me throw this one to you. Portability. Yeah. Cast iron is heavy as heck. So you might, if you're out camping or something, I don't know. Just like griddle could be very useful in a portability situation or maybe tailgating. I don't know. Just throwing it out there. There might be unique situations. Like I'm mostly cooking burgers or whatever, like where it makes sense. But I don't care about griddles that much. But I could see use cases for it.
Guys, now barbecue season's approaching, and I actually know someone that was talking to me. He just got a house, and he was like, I really want to get a grill for the yard. He ended up getting a gas grill, got a Weber gas grill. For him, it was best because he gets home from work, and he has to quickly light it and whatever, and he wanted something that was, you know, no fuss, no muss. If I said to you, I want to get into grilling, so I guess you... I'm kind of answering my own question, because if I said I want to get into smoking, I obviously am not going to get a Weber gas grill. But if I just wanted to, my entry point into grilling and my entry point into smoking, can you make a couple of recommendations?
Yeah. I mean, my again, I just mentioned it earlier, but I think a Weber kettle is just about the most versatile tool you can have. It's durable. It's relatively inexpensive as well. You could smoke a brisket on there. You could grill hot dogs and hamburgers. I think a Weber kettle is just a fantastic grill to have in your arsenal. And then as far as like smokers and things like that go, I honestly, like, I mean, as you guys probably see just from social media, I'm cooking all the time outside, but I cook even more now that I have a pellet grill at my disposal. Like, I literally cook pretty much every day outside, even in wintertime. I just have the pellet grill kind of wheeled up to the back door, and I can do everything I want to do on that. It's not as great at grilling, but it does the job. But certainly it is a great tool to have for getting into, especially for the beginner getting into smoking. I really highly recommend a pellet grill as well.
And what's cool about the pellet grill is that it's versatile, not just for meats, but you could do desserts and you can do appetizers and all kinds of cool stuff. A friend that I think you chatted with before, Ed Randolph of Handsome Devil Barbecue, has multiple books on what to do with pellet grills. So highly recommend checking that out. But I was gonna say that's such a, it's so versatile. That's you need to get that first. I think it's really overly ambitious to maybe just get an offset, you know, smoker or something first up. It's going to be intimidating. You're going to be still learning the basics. Like, have something that's going to, you know, hold your hand a little bit when you're working on all these new things. So yeah, I think getting a pellet grill, pellet smoker is probably what that person needs to get if they haven't already got that. Or sorry, they got a gas grill, but tell them next to get a pellet smoker.
You know, speaking about books, I know you have on your smoke sheet, watch, listen, and read. Any recommendations for new barbecue books coming out this year?
Let's see. Yeah, we have one that looks intriguing to me. I don't know a lot about it, but out of Australia, there are a couple of younger ladies. They're called the Grill Sisters. They have a book that's coming out that looks pretty cool. It looks like it has lots of different, more internationally oriented dishes in there, which is really great. The other one, and Sean might be more familiar with this person, is Ed Mitchell, who's a pit master out of North Carolina. He's coming out with a book as well with his son, Ryan. So Ed and Ryan Mitchell. Sean, have you met Ed before?
I have met, at the Big Apple Barbecue. He is sort of like, he's like royalty kind of in that world, you know, and especially there. So everybody wants to like talk to Ed for a few minutes and he's just like, I'm good. Like everyone talk to me. He's like, I'm just chilling. But, you know, like he's such a nice guy and he's just been around for so long. So that book, man, I cannot wait to check that one out for sure. He's probably been for most of his life underappreciated. And then now everyone's like, oh yeah, this guy's been doing it forever. He's, you know, somebody who pioneered, you know, whole hog cooking. So I definitely cannot wait to. And his son is so involved with that business now. So in a lot of ways, he's kind of taken on the reins and is doing this and, you know, really making this business work for their family. So it's pretty awesome. So definitely would check that book out.
What about the book Barbecue for All, BBQ for All, Year Round Outdoor Cooking with Recipes, Meats, Vegetables, Fish, and Seafood by Marcus Bowden.
It's a March 2023 release that we have not had a chance to check out. At least I haven't had a chance to check it out yet. It's very new as of this recording. But we definitely make it look interesting. I like the fact that it's not just meat, but he's throwing out recipes for vegetables, fish, you know, different things, that even recipes for vegetarians and vegans as well. So, and we've talked about that before, and especially we've talked about just the way that barbecue is going that we want to be more inclusive for everybody and have a lot of cool, you know, ideas about what you can cook. So I like the fact that that book is going to bring a lot of interesting ideas to the table.
Now, you mentioned in Australia. So we had Ben Arnott from Smoking Hot Confessions on, and he talked about how, you know, barbecue is getting much bigger in Australia. In the smoke sheet, I know NYC barbecue is more this area, but the smoke sheet, you focus on barbecue everywhere. With barbecue gaining overseas, any consideration of one expanding the smoke sheet to include that, or even coming out with a third publication? Because you guys, you know, you don't know what to do with all your free time.
You know, we've talked about this, that we want to include more international. So if you are a barbecue writer and you are located in Canada, Mexico, Europe, Australia, please get in touch. Japan, like seriously, like we want to, the barbecue, you know, barbecue can be found in so many places. We have featured articles from Canada and we have a lot of Canadian barbecue friends, but we need to do some more work, you know, on a lot of these other countries. If you are listening to this and you are international and want to write about barbecue for the smoke sheet, we'd love to have you.
To wrap this up, I want to come back to pizza. You mentioned pizza. Some barbecue people like Bob Trudnack now has come out with some pizza items. Pizza is, and we can say we've had pizza people on because it's kind of you're cooking outdoors. Are you finding that pizza is becoming more associated with barbecue, or it's just its own class and it's just outdoor in a stone oven or a brick oven? Or how do you guys see pizza? Especially like with your publication as well.
Well, I mean, being like New York based or New York City area based, like obviously love pizza and wish that it had more intersection with barbecue. I feel like you're more likely to see like a pop-up where somebody is doing smoked meats and pizza than like a dedicated thing. I was excited about a project that was going to be New York based that was going to have a lot of smoked meats on the pizza, but two such things never really materialized. I want to see more of that. I wish that we were seeing more of that, but I go to barbecue events sometimes and there will be one operation there that is doing pizza. Usually that's very, very good pizza at the barbecue event. And maybe it's just because they also like love, you know, cooking with but extra hot, you know, and just, I don't know, maybe it's just culinary, right? You're just around so many people that love, you know, good food. I don't know, Ryan, you actually spent some time with, you know, Mr. Urban Slicer, right? What do you think?
Yeah. And I mean, at the event I was at last weekend, they had a whole class on cooking pizza outdoor. They sold several pizza ovens, lots of new pizza oven products. I'm not familiar with them as much. They looked really great. If I can convince my wife to let me buy yet another outdoor cooking device, then that might be the one that I get. But yeah, they had a lot of standalone kind of pizza grill type attachments and ovens and things like that that looked really intriguing as well. I think that that would be really a natural fit between those two worlds to combine pizza and barbecue.
Okay, actually, wait a minute. I think that's the thread. The thread is backyard barbecue is also backyard pizza. Yep. So it's I've been in some really like fancy backyards where they had both, where they have like a stone, like a huge like stone oven, like a very expensive stuff, and then they have a smoker. You know, like I get it. It's like
Now they're selling these little standalone kind of pizza unit things. These smaller pizza oven things in the backyard that you don't need all the whole stone and wood fire and all that stuff. So I think those are going to be really big in the future.
So we are talking to Sean Ludwig and Ryan Cooper. You guys have been on many times and every time it's better than the last. We really appreciate it. Tell everyone how they can get your incredible newsletters and reach you and just what to look forward to from you guys?
Well, for the smoke sheet, you can find us at bbqnewsletter.com. Would highly recommend subscribing to our newsletter, but also finding us on social media at the smoke sheet. That's on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. We got to do some other platforms too. We'll eventually get to some other platforms as well.
YouTube.
Yeah.
Why do you do some?
We got to do more. We got to do more YouTube.
Do some TikToks. We'd love to see you dancing on TikTok.
I honestly,
I don't know if you want that.
It might work. Also, NYCBBQ. That's NYCBBQ.com. You can find me on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and then maybe dancing on YouTube. Who knows? Or dancing on TikTok is what I mean.
Thank you so much.
You can find me at BBQ Tourist, BBQTourist.com, and BBQ Tourist on all the platforms as well.
That's awesome. Guys, you give us legitimacy. You know, you really do. You come on and we realize we really are a barbecue podcast. So we thank you very much. And I got one last question for you. And this is self-serving, but, you know, we have to talk about ourselves a little bit. We've got episode 200 that will be probably sometime this summer. And we're trying to figure out what to do. So we're thinking maybe going somewhere. We don't know where. Where should we go and be kind?
I actually have the perfect place for you. And I was actually going to see if I could break this news, but a little barbecue and a little baseball. And I don't know a lot about baseball, but this might be the perfect thing for you. Royal Stadium in Kansas City, Kauffman Stadium, they are going to do something new where they have a, instead of having a fixed concession stand with, you know, a single barbecue provider, they're going to do a barbecue pop-up at each home game where they rotate a different Kansas City barbecue joint.
Wow.
And this year they have three joints that kind of have divvied up all the home games. Check out the first barbecue pop-up there. But that might be an interesting little road trip for you guys for the 200th episode. You can get baseball and barbecue all in one place.
Nice. Well, wait.
Have you two been to Kauffman Stadium?
No.
That seems like an ideal because it is the perfect combination.
It is, and we'll see if we can make that happen. So, thank you very much, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ryan. Thank you, Sean. Thank you for having your pulse on the barbecue world. You know, what I really enjoy about, there's so much that I enjoy talking with them about, but they know about the events that regular people like you and me will go to. We're not competition cooks, but we really like good barbecue, and they know good barbecue, and just appreciate them very much. And we're very grateful that they've come on again.
Yeah.
To the show.
They're always invited. Absolutely.
Oh yeah. They have an open invitation. And really we said to them, well, this is going to come on in May, because they were ready. They were ready. They had events in April. And like I said, this is coming out on April 22nd. So on the 29th, 1 week is going to be the Jeff Michener benefit at Pig Beach in Queens, New York. And if there are any tickets remaining, we recommend that you purchase them. It's a phenomenal event. We were there last year, and you will not go away hungry. That's for sure.
That's for sure. So Len, you know what happened before we go? What happened in the baseball world this week? We know Max Scherzer was suspended 10 games for sticky substance, which he claims is just rosin and sweat. Major League Baseball didn't believe him, and he's appealing. We don't know the outcome of the appeal as of right now, as of this recording. Mm-hmm. But I think Max Scherzer should take this opportunity and turn it into a money-making venture.
How so?
Well, he can go to any of the major personal hygiene products for antiperspirant, and all he has to say is, look, you're sweating too much. Use this antiperspirant and you won't get thrown out of the game.
Yes. Wait, Jeff, you are you in advertising? Because I think that should be your career choice. There you go.
I should. You know, right guard would be perfect for right guard.
Right, you know? Right guard.
Sweating too much, use right guard, and you won't get thrown out of the game.
Axe for men.
Yeah, whatever. Didn't matter. Right.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, very good. I listen, Max Scherzer. Let's see what happens. That's baseball. We are brought to you by Bet Online. It is where the game starts, but we know we're not starting, we're ending. How do we end?
With the poet,
Joe Krakowski.
And the musician,
Dave Dresser.
And the song.
Baseball always brings you home. I hope you guys think of this as your home, away from home. And we can't wait to welcome you back home to episode 183. See ya.
Baseball.